If you're listening to this, then you likely already know that being an independent musician can be a lonely road. And maybe your friends and your family just don't fully understand why you do what you do or why you invest so much time, energy, and money towards achieving your music goals. And especially early on, it can be hard to find people who really understand what you're trying to accomplish and how to make it happen. So that's where Modern Musician comes in. My name is Michael Walker, and you know, I can understand and relate to that feeling. I've been there myself, and so has our team of independent artists. And the truth is that basically everything good in my life has been the result of music. It's the reason I met my wife. It's why I have my three kids. It's how I met my best friends. And now with Modern Musician, we've seen so many talented artists who started out with a dream, with a passion, but without really a fan base, without a business, and be able to take that and turn it into a sustainable full-time career and be able to impact hundreds of thousands, even millions of fans with their music. And we've had thousands of messages from artists who've told us that we've helped change their lives forever. And it just gets even more exciting, fulfilling when you're surrounded by a community of other people who get it and who share their success and their knowledge with each other openly. And so if you are feeling called to make your music a full-time career and to be able to reach more people with your music, then I want to invite you to join our community so that we can support your growth and help lift you up as you pursue your musical dreams. You'll be able to interact in a community with other high-level artists, coaches, and industry professionals, as well as be able to participate in our daily live podcasts, meet these amazing guests, and get access to completely free training. If you'd like to join our family of artists who truly care about your success, then click on the link in the show notes and sign up now.
You can fly to space on a suborbital flight now for about the price of a house in a good city.
Welcome to the Modern Musician Podcast, where each week I help you turn your passion for making music into a profitable career. This is all about you discovering and expressing who you really are so that you can build a loyal fan base that truly resonates with you and with your music. You can impact more people with your artwork. I'm your host, Michael Walker, and let's get into it. All right. I'm excited to be here today with my new friend, Krish Bosshausen. And Chris has a project called Dr. Crispy. He's a physicist turned musician, a former astronaut whose music projects are deeply infused with exploration, innovation, and space-aged imagination. In fact, we actually, as crazy as this sounds, we have music together, a couple of our songs that are actually floating through outer space across the universe with one of the members of the original Beatles, Ringo Starr, which is like a crazy way to introduce this topic. And maybe we'll have a chance to dive a little bit deeper into what does that even mean. But Chris, it's great to connect with you, now for the podcast, and look forward to having a conversation to share a little bit more about your story and what your music stands for.
Thanks, Michael. It's really lovely to be here.
Awesome. So yeah, maybe you can do a little bit of a deeper dive into introducing yourself, and I would love to understand better about where this kind of cross section between space and future technology and peace and love and music started for you.
Yeah, I've always loved space and I've always loved music. It's always been a kind of a creative tension for me. As a kid, I got a telescope and I would look up to the stars, and I remember watching Carl Sagan, the original Cosmos TV show, and just being inspired by the universe. So space has just always had a pull for me. And then similarly for music, I kind of got into music through computer games, and I would borrow my friend's Commodore 64 or Commodore Amiga and actually try and write computer game music on it. So definitely both of those are like very nerdy dimensions of things. And so for music, for me, really it was always kind of like about synthesizers and digital music. And at some point when I was, at university, I was like, oh man, I got to pick. And I was trying to like learn guitar and, rehearse 4 hours a day and, be a real musician, but I was also just trying to write a PhD thesis in astrophysics, and like my head exploded and I had to like pick one. So I ended up becoming a professional physicist and engineer. And I think that worked out okay, because I got to go to space, which is really, really cool. But now I'm like revisiting my music and some of the older stuff I wrote. And I found it's actually a great way to like tie the two together, because I feel like I can share my feelings about space more authentically through song.
Mm. Cool. Oh man, that is awesome. I mean, very few people can say that they've been to outer space. I've heard that there's a special moment when you're looking down on Earth and you get perspective. There's maybe a phrase or word for it, and you're like, wow, like all of our problems and issues are like in this little, like, you know, this little ball. Could you share more about that? Like, what's the name for that? And did you
I think you're referring to the overview effect, which is a term coined by author Frank White, who actually has interviewed most flown astronauts. And so that is a common, very common experience for many space flyers, particularly the early ones in the Apollo era and Gemini and Apollo and so on, where, you know, we hadn't seen the Earth from space, right? And looking down on it and actually seeing how thin the atmosphere was relative to the diameter of the Earth and, you know, seeing the continents without borders, it can be a very profound experience. I actually had a slightly different experience, which I talked to Frank about, which I called the out-of-view effect, which was when I looked out into the blackness of space, almost felt like it was calling me. It was the spookiest, creepiest feeling, but kind of creepy in the, like, powerful and potent and awe-inspiring way of like, whoa, what was that?
I mean, when I think about outer space and I really sort of like look out into the stars and contemplate that, I feel like I have that sort of, that feeling comes out. Like, what the heck is going on in a black hole? Like, wait, what? Like, hold on. there's so much that that we don't understand. It's just so huge. It's so big. Curious to hear from your perspective, as someone who's like so deeply involved in those different worlds now, with, you know, with outer space and, you know, physics and music, I'm guessing that gives you some perspective to kind of draw certain links or parallels between them. I'm curious, have you had that experience where like how do those worlds blend together for you, and what do you think are some unique qualities to your music that you're able to bring to it because of your background in astrophysics?
Well, just like with my music, I do a lot of public speaking, and I've noticed that people listen to me differently now I've been to space. And it's not like they didn't listen before, but, you know, everybody has dreams, right? And we all have our own dreams. And when we hear other people's dreams, I think we kind of like take it lightly, particularly if you're on a stage talking about my dream is to go to space. You know, maybe that isn't necessarily convincing to everybody in the audience. It might resonate with some who have the same dream, but other people might walk out and go, seems a bit unbelievable. And I think that's a totally healthy reaction. But now that I've been, I noticed that those same people now look at me and go, huh, what, I could? And I see the switch flick in their heads, and I'm like, whoa, that is a superpower that I did not have before I went to space. And so now I think I can just speak authentically to the experience, and seeing people realize that maybe space travel is accessible to them too. That's a really big game changer.
Yeah, it is super cool. It certainly seems like we're closer than ever right now to anyone who sincerely wants to go to outer space, like getting closer to what, like, quote unquote space tourism, or the ability to, you know, to be on a trip that goes, you know, out of orbit. What's the current landscape right now for, like, are there commercial like flights and things that, if someone, you know, has like a, you know, is able to invest? I guess everything is like, you know, a matter of money, but not everything, but space travel feels like it is now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What is,
I mean,
that,
this is a
what
big
is that
change,
situation?
Right. I mean, the fact that you can buy a ticket at all, and there's currently at least two operators that are flying, SpaceX and Blue Origin. And so, you know, the fact that you can even buy a ticket, I mean, that might sound, again, like maybe, you know, there's a lot of criticism about, oh, this is just for billionaires, but you got to remember, like, in the past, this was just for nation states, right?
Yeah.
This took the GDP of a country to do. So, you know, you can fly to space on a suborbital flight now for about the price of a house in a good city. And okay, that's still a lot for most people, and that is not fully, that's not like a bus ticket, but it's not a nation state's GDP either.
So, yeah. I mean, I try to have perspective when looking at, you know, being on the edge of technology, with the fact that in our pockets, most of us carry a device that's more powerful than, you know, what used to be costing millions and millions of dollars, you know, and fill up an entire room. And now, like, almost anyone who wants, you know, one of these devices can just have one. Seems like an exciting future where, yeah, anyone that wanted, you know, like you mentioned, like a bus ticket to be able to go somewhere like that might have an opportunity to.
Yeah, yeah. Your phone is more than 1,000 times more powerful than a crazy supercomputer from the 80s, right? So
like, even for like perspective, I mean I was trying to come back to this like as frequently as doesn't disrupt my like normal life, the fact that I don't know, 1,000 years ago the most wealthy, you know, king or queen in the world compared to the quality of life that even like the floor, you know, has right now in, you know, most of the world is just so like radically different. Like, you know, the floor has raised so much compared to where things were a few hundred years ago. It's a pretty amazing time to be alive.
It is, right? Yeah. I mean, there's so much going on. And, you know, here we are blasting music out into space. I mean, that's like really cool.
Yeah. Maybe. So this is probably a good segue to talking about that experience. And so could you share for anyone who's listening to this right now who, you know, we talked a little bit about like Ringo Starr and music going to outer space. Could you share? I'd actually be curious to hear this from your perspective too, because this is actually our first time, you know, meeting personally. We're connected through our shared contact, Bob Richards, who was the reason that I was involved in the Ringo, you know, his birthday party and that whole mission in the first place. Would love to hear your perspective, how it came about for you, and for anyone that's listening to this right now who is has no idea what we're talking about. Could you introduce the story?
Yeah, so Bob, who you mentioned, Bob Richards, is an old space friend of mine. He actually used to, his company used to sponsor a youth space conference that I helped organize in Vancouver back in 2004, so 21 years ago. And we've been friends ever since. Bob also is an avid music fan and supporter, absolutely loves music. And so we have that in common as well. We also used to drive the same car, which is quite funny. So Bob, yeah, he was helping Ringo. What Ringo Starr wanted for his birthday this year was to do a mission for peace and love and broadcast some music into space in the spirit of, you know, peace and love and human unity and connection. And Bob thought some of my music would be suitable. And I actually ended up, I sent one of my songs, which is called Zero Gravity, which is about, you know, the sense of being in space, but realizing everyone you love is down here on Earth. And I also sent a second song, which was from a dear friend of mine who sadly passed away, 3 years ago, a San Francisco based, trumpeter and singer named Rich Armstrong. And he had a beautiful, beautiful song that I sent that was, you know, really totally on the theme. It's a song about karma and love and connection and looking down on the world and seeing that we're one. And so I thought that was actually probably the most fitting thing to send. So, yeah. I sent Rich's song into space and a little piece of him is out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Ah, that's beautiful. Yeah, it was a pretty special moment, you know, in Beverly Hills when we were celebrating Ringo's 85th birthday, and it really was like a full on mission space launch countdown, like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and boom, sending the songs in outer space. And what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, you had two songs that you sent out, and that it was really around this theme of, you know, love and spreading peace and love, you know, across, you know, the Earth, but also, you know, transmitting that across the universe as a potential way that, like, there's a non-zero chance that there could be other forms of intelligence, that one of the first things that they come across or see is actually the broadcast from the songs that you sent and that the songs that we included in that mission, which is kind of radical to think about.
Yeah, no, it's like, it was such a beautiful playlist as well. So it was a real honor to sort of be part of it.
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Yeah. We had sort of like a round circle listen party, you know, at the birthday party. We were listening through all the songs, and it was very cool to kind of have that shared mission or shared purpose of spreading peace and love. And very cool that Ringo just does this, you know, every year for his birthday. As it's a good reminder, and, you know, of course, very needed right now in the world to remember that message that you just shared, that we are one.
Yeah. Did he have a favorite? Did you notice?
Ringo?
Yeah.
He didn't. He didn't say if one was his favorite, which is good. Probably not make anyone feel excluded. Yeah. I mean, also, like, Ringo, you know, in full transparency, I feel like his it was his 85th birthday party, and the dude is, he's Ringo Starr. And so, like, you know, this is a time where a lot of, there's a lot of moving parts and different things happening. In fact, gosh, I think when we did the countdown, you know, for his birthday, and we sent it, I'm trying to remember his exact words. We got him on video, and it made me chuckle. But he said something to the degree of, like, you know, and like, this is for, you know, all those like the space guys who are like, we're sending like our songs into outer space together. Yeah. And I was like, cool. Like, we are like the space guys, and you are the space guys.
Brilliant.
Yeah. It was awesome.
I look forward to our numbers growing. that's the main thing.
Uh-huh. So maybe you can share a little bit more about your music, and, you know, what is it really that's kind of like driving your music right now? And are you like, are you still focused primarily on, you know, the astrophysicist? Like, what's your day-to-day life look like, and how does it, you know, connect with your music? What are your goals with the music project?
Yeah, they're kind of all sort of heading to one goal, which is my stated goal ever since I was a younger student in university, was to make space travel as easy as catching a bus. Like, that's kind of really what I want.
Wow.
And I'd love, you know, for you to actually just be able to jump on a bus, Michael, and be in space and experience it, and not have to mortgage your home to do so. So that's sort of the goal. And so my job at the moment is I'm a space investor and mentor and advisor to companies. So I help them, you know, actually build stuff for space, that's going to hardware that's going to fly into space and do things, and help them, you know, succeed. And I really enjoy kind of being a coach and a mentor. I think I enjoy teaching. So that's a really fun role for me. So that's sort of my main day job, if you like. And what I do while I'm waiting, you know, to hear from companies, or, you know, waiting between calls, is I play guitar. And anyone listening, I have a whole row of guitars on the wall behind me here that Michael can see. And so I just, you know, I sort of think about all of these things in context, and I've never called myself a space musician, and I was trying to not be a space musician. I was just trying to write music, but I tend to write a lot of music about space, whether I want to or not. But I think a kind of connecting theme for me, both on the space side and the music side, was why I wanted to do this making space as easy as catching a bus thing was, I realized that just being like a NASA astronaut and flying one or two space shuttle missions wasn't the space future I wanted. I wanted one where all of humanity was there and represented, and, you know, we could all go up with our friends or our family and go there and come back and live and work in space just like we do on Earth. So it sort of became a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. And so it was a sense of it being space being for everyone. And I think this sort of sense of inclusivity is what I like to bring to my music as well, and like tap into authentic feelings and emotions that people are feeling in life. And it doesn't have to be about space. It can just be relatable experiences of love and loss and grief and joy and happiness and adventure and fun. And so I just kind of enjoy the human aspect of space, and I enjoy the human aspect of my music.
Awesome. Okay, so what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, like it or not, because of who you are, your songs, even though you're not intentionally like writing them to be about outer space, it's such a big part of who you are that naturally that comes through, which I think makes a lot of sense. It's sort of like the wherever you go, there you are, sort of like phenomena. And so just you being authentic and sharing your music, it makes sense that you have those themes. And it sounds like, you know, you don't necessarily have to be super, you know, into space in order to appreciate the songs and relate with them. But I think that is something that's unique, you know, because not a lot, I mean, I can't think of any other musicians that have sort of a character that's tied intimately with, you know, outer space, and that have the same background that you have, where they could actually write songs kind of connected to that. So I think it's a really cool way to sort of brand or sort of like theme, you know, any unique characteristic, what the music's about. Could you share maybe one to three of your songs, like your favorite songs that you feel like best represent the project, and maybe talk a little bit about what they're about and what inspired them?
Yeah, so I have a set of three actually that I'm working on that are kind of like my trilogy about my spaceflight, and I'm about to hopefully finish the third one soon. I've been perfecting the mix for a little longer than I should have been. But the three songs are kind of trying to tell the arc of my experience in space flying on the Blue Origin mission. And so the first one is called The Great Unknown, and it was about just the joy of going on this adventure and having had this dream my whole life. And, you know, then there's a music video online that I think has probably close to 5 million views now. So please check that out, The Great Unknown, Dr. Crispy. It's an awesome video. Kind of, I know, AB some footage of a friend of mine's kid who looks a lot like me as younger me with the dream, and then me actually going. And so everyone's like, wow, where did you get this old footage of you from? The kid looks so much like me. It's amazing. And so that one is just the joy, right? It's just the pure joy of like, we're going on an adventure. The second one, Zero Gravity, which is the one I sent up on Ringo's broadcast, is more about looking down on Earth and reflecting and taking it in and seeing that actually the whole human race is down there below you. Everyone who's ever lived or died, loved, lost, they're all there. And there's no one behind me. All the entire human race that's ever existed is in front of me. And that was a really profound thought. And so that was a song actually that I was co-written. It was actually half of it was a gift. I had I told this story to some friends at a songwriting camp, and they actually started writing this song for me and gave me the first draft. And then together we finished it. I wrote the second verse and the bridge. And recorded the music for it and released it. So that was actually like a very beautiful gift from these two friends, Adrian and Lucia. So thank you guys if you're out there listening. And the third song is called Dreams Are Enough, which was really about the it took me 27 years from deciding I wanted to go to space to actually doing it. And so this song is also taking me about 27 years to mix, it seems. But you know, it's about actually getting there in the end and persevering and dealing with adversity and setbacks and delays and you know, just space is really hard, man. And sometimes, you know, things happen and things get delayed, and sometimes it looked like it was never going to happen at all. And so this is just a song about having a dream and never giving up hope. And so that's the three bookends of my space journey.
That's awesome. And are those three songs all available right now on Spotify, or are they any of them still like unreleased?
So the third one hasn't come out yet. Just when I finish the mix, I will put it out. And the video is finished though. So we have an awesome music video that was animated actually by this awesome animator and art director, Loic Zimmerman. So I have this awesome video. They're just waiting for me to ship them the final audio file. But the other two, Zero Gravity and The Great Unknown, are on YouTube and Spotify. And now iTunes, mm-hmm. Apple Music.
Mm. Cool. That's a great story arc. And it has like, you know, an actual rooted experience that it came from. And to your point around people being able to appreciate it, you know, and relate to it through their own life, certainly feels like all of us can relate to having a dream and then having to go through some period of struggle or ambition or time period to kind of get there until you finally like realize it. Alongside those themes, I would love to hear you share a little bit more about your experience of having that dream, working for 27 plus years to like achieve that dream. And maybe what your advice would be for someone who's listening or watching this right now that like has, you know, a dream, you know, like this, whether it's related to, you know, music or it's related to anything that, you know, they are passionate about. What have you learned, you know, through that journey that you might share with someone for advice?
Yeah, I think one of the things I learned is I seem to have a brain defect where I just don't take all of the negative data and decide that it's not going to work. Somehow I keep deluding myself into just keep trying. And I think that's a really amazing brain defect to have. So I don't know why, but I just kept chipping away at it. And I can't really say why, but I did, and I'm grateful. And so when I was 17, I actually applied to be an Air Force pilot in Australia, thinking that I could, that seemed to me the traditional route to go to NASA, right? You become a pilot, maybe a fighter pilot, then you train to be a shuttle pilot, and then you fly a shuttle mission. So I had this 17-year-old business plan in my head of like, great, life plan. I'm going to become, you know, go to the Australian Air Force, get transferred to America, become an NASA pilot, fly to a space shuttle. Went into the admissions test. Everything was going great. and then they found out I was colorblind and they disqualified me. Oof. And I didn't know really that I was colorblind. Maybe I did, but it was, had never like clicked that. So I do remember looking back and going, I couldn't tell blue from red pencils, or just blue from purple pencils when I was a kid. But now I'm like, it makes sense. Anyway, they caught it. And so that was a setback, and I was like, that door closed. And so being, and by the way, that, you know, that was in the mid 1990s. These nation state programs were the only way to go to space. So the only door I had closed. Right, there was no path forward at that point. And so then I found this international space community, the one I mentioned earlier. I started, you know, helping run these conferences for youth. So we would get together and we'd all commiserate about how none of us knew how to get to space, and it didn't seem like we were going to, but there had to be a way. And we just kept chipping away at it. And, you know, fast forward 27 years, many of my friends work now at these space companies like SpaceX and Blue Origin and Virgin Galactic, and they're building spaceships that can carry people. And so that was, I flew almost 27 years to the day from me first trying to go to the Air Force and be a pilot. And I often think, well, what if I'd quit at 10? What if I'd quit then? What if I'd quit at 10? Or, you know, humans like round numbers. What if I got to 25 years of working on this? I'm like, man, that's like a quarter of a century on this stupid dream. Why don't I just quit, right? Well, little did I know, I would have been 2 years away from flying, right? And so I think it was just this stubborn willingness to just keep going. And so, you know, my advice for people is, if you've got a dream, maybe it's not going to happen right away. And if it's a big enough dream, is it worth waiting 27, 28, 29, 30, 50 years for? I don't know. But if you really believe in that dream, I'd say don't let anyone take it away from you. And just keep going, because it can happen. It just might take a long time. So just be prepared for a long ride. But don't get discouraged, and don't quit.
It's super inspiring. And yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like what you're describing around, was almost like, I don't know if delusion is the right word for it, but like that faith or that belief, you know, what you described is like a almost delusional sort of like belief that it's possible, and just to keep chipping away at it. And it certainly seems like every successful person that I've studied who's, you know, changed the world or done something revolutionary had to go through that phase where they were like almost delusional, or where like, because you have to be, in order to create something new that doesn't exist yet, you have to have crazy ideas.
Let's unpack that a little more, because I think it's super interesting, right? So the people often say, oh, how did you find the strength? Or, you know, how did you find the courage? Or the, you know, how did you find the patience? And the answer is I didn't. I didn't find any of those things. And didn't take strength or courage or patience to do this. You know, it didn't take resilience. I mean, maybe some intrinsic resilience, but not actively, right? It was just more this passive resignation to, this is what I want, and I'm just going to wait, right? It was this real low-key kind of energy of just like, doesn't feel right. This is not the end. This is not the right path. Just try again. And it wasn't even like tenaciousness or anything. It was just this kind of being in it, and it just being the thing. And it didn't take strength, because I was able to just somehow, you know, turn off that critic. So there was no adversity, you know what I mean, really. It was just this almost meditation, like, just gonna do it. I'm just gonna keep doing it. And so yeah, so it really does come from an almost like a resignation to fate, and just going, I'm just gonna let it happen. Yeah, it wasn't a fight, it was just a flow.
That's nice. I mean, that feels a lot more like, it feels better to have, you know, something like that, as opposed to like fighting, kind of clawing your way and trying to do something. Yeah, that's kind of fighting against the flow.
Fighting for 25 years is tiring, right? I mean, that would be exhausting. And the only way to survive for 25 years is to be passive, right? To, you know, to be a rock, not a storm, right?
That's interesting. Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of sort of this like, shift or this metaphor around swimming along with the current as opposed to like fighting the current. And when you can, like you're describing, be passive or let go or kind of go along with it, then the river can be really powerful. It can like carve out, you know, the ground, but it does, you know, we can fight it and try to go one way. But if you, when you let go, maybe counterintuitively, sometimes you can get better momentum through that versus trying and efforting and trying to make something happen.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically you became the river. You became the river and then you went to outer space.
Yes.
The story of Dr. Crispy.
Yes.
Cool. Okay. So, I mean, that's also, I know I personally feel, you know, inspired hearing stories like this, where it's like 28 years of, you know, in the making. And there's points during that story where it would have, many people may have given up, you know, early. And like you mentioned, like 25 years into it, like it hadn't happened yet. So having a willingness to show up, and if you truly believe in something, then knowing that it's possible, you know, and that even if like right now, today, it's not possible, maybe it's a matter of when. Curious if you have any recommendations for people who are kind of looking for that dream or looking for that passion. And like for you, it feels like this was 28 years in the making because you tapped into something that was very authentic, like as a passion, something that you were really excited about. What about someone who is listening to us right now, who, you know, they're a little bit like a discovery phase and they're trying to figure out what are they here for and what are they passionate about? Do you have any thoughts or advice on how they kind of find that thing that they'd be willing to, you know, stick to for that long?
Well, the first thing I'd ask is, does everyone need a thing? Right. I think a lot of people, and I know that my experience is not universal, right? There are definitely people who don't quite know what their thing is. And then there are, you know, people like Morgan Freeman, who became a successful actor at 50. I think he was almost 50 when he did his first film.
Wow.
Right. His entire career and everything we know about Morgan Freeman as a famous actor and one of the world's greatest actors, he did in the last half of his life.
Hmm.
Right. And so there are people who bloom late, and that's okay. And there are people who maybe their calling in life is to be kind, to be gentle, to be a good carer, to be a good partner. You know, so we need, you know, one of the things about me wanting to make space inclusive is, if we really take humanity to space, it really does mean humanity, right? It's not a select few. It's not just scientists or mission specialists or engineers. And it's not just the elite. It is everyone we need, you know, doctors, dentists, plumbers, electricians, poets, writers, authors, singers, actors. And I hate to say it, we even need lawyers, right? So, you know, we've got to take everyone to space. And so in the great sort of span of everything that humanity is, there's a role for everyone. It just might be subtle. And maybe they're already doing the thing. You know, it just, you know, a society doesn't always value all occupations equally or all vocations. But some people may already be doing the thing, but just haven't let themselves see it yet. That's okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom there. What comes to mind is I'm not super familiar with the meaning of this word, but Dharma, I think, might describe it. Dharma is like a Buddhist concept that's about finding that grounding in your life and appreciating each moment to the fullest and being in alignment with, like, it's basically like the doing part of how you show up. And what I'm hearing you say is that, you know, maybe what you're doing right now already has that capacity. It's just a matter of fully appreciating that and showing up fully to each moment.
Yeah, yeah. I just looked it up on Wikipedia as you were chatting, and you know, The Dharma refers to an individual's moral responsibilities or duties, and the Dharma of a farmer differs from the Dharma of a soldier. And that's just the headline on Wikipedia. And so, you know, that says everything, right? I mean, you know, the Dharma of a stay-at-home parent is different than the Dharma of an astronaut, and both are valuable. And I think that's a beautiful way of summarizing what I was trying to say.
Cool. Well, this is a fun conversation. We're going to outer space in a few different domains. Kind of coming back to the music project and, you know, Dr. Crispy, could you share some of your musical influences? And, you know, if you, I don't know, let's say that you could go on tour with, you know, three of your favorite artists, like, who are you most influenced by growing up that you feel like has come through in your music?
Well, I definitely loved computer game music, and I think for me, the computer and now more the music studio is kind of my creative tool. And so, you know, I've always loved synthesizers and stuff. So big influences would be like Jean-Michel Jarre and you know, John Carpenter with some of his 80s film scores, and you know, sort of basically like this synthwave vibe, right? Stranger Things soundtrack is awesome. Hear that, and I can't believe, actually, oh, by the way, today Stranger Things season 5
comes out. I was just gonna say, it's like later tonight
at 5 p.m PST. This is not a Netflix ad, you know, just all this, you know, really, I just find synthesizers, they allow you to find unique sounds that create new worlds, you know. And if you think about like the score on Blade Runner, or particularly even the beautiful music on the second Blade Runner movie, right, Blade Runner 2049, just the how sound can create a world. And so I love to just get inside a synthesizer, turn the knobs, and create a new sound that I've never heard before, and it speaks to me, it says something, it paints a picture, and then I find the lyrics that I want to sing to that kind of come out of it. So that's sort of my creative process. And yeah, I mean, who would I love to tour with? That's a great question. You know, a couple of favorites that come to mind, the band Empire of the Sun. I think they're super awesome. There's a whole bunch of synthwave artists like Midnight or FM 85, Kavinsky, all the big sort of synthwave names. It'd be awesome to you know, if you one day even put together a synthwave and synthesizer focused music festival. Definitely got there's a lot of great music out there
in outer space.
Yeah, and .. in outer space.
I have a feeling that if you're able to promise any artist, you know, that's alive and capable of making music today, that you could bring them to outer space to do it. I don't think you would have a hard time finding people raising their hands to go on tour.
Probably not.
Yeah. That's kind of a pretty wild concept. I mean, do you think that within our lifetime that something like that will be possible, is like to actually play a show in outer space with a group of fans and artists? Let's say maybe like, how many, gosh, like 50 to 100 people in outer space playing a live show.
Oh yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah. No, I mean, one specific thing I'm trying to work on now is like, what is my next really, really big space project? And I think it's actually, I'm hoping to help build a space station of about that size. I mean, that'd be awesome. And so, you know, I think, you know, living in space, you know, millions of people, that's a little far off still. And, you know, we have the International Space Station, which only holds 10 people. I don't think that's big enough for a concert. So I think 100, 150 people is about the right number. You could hold a conference there. You could hold a music event. You know, you could hold a weekend-long event, anything cool. So a giant party. And that's starting to shift space to being more for people, right? And so I think about 100, 150 is the right number. And so, yeah, let's do it. Let's have the world's first concert in space.
Okay. Dude, that's a really sweet idea. I bet you could, any artist, I can, at least I imagine, unless someone's like terrified of, I don't know, being in outer space, I can't imagine someone who would be like, who wouldn't want to be at that show performing, and for it to, you know, to be a massive event for humanity as a whole. Also a great networking opportunity for, you know, anyone that's there at that event. It's probably going to be a very cool, I mean, I love your vision and mission around making space inclusive, because, you know, like there's a lot of us on the world, and, you know, when we improve things for everyone, when we raise the floor, it ultimately ends up benefiting everyone. But also it does seem like there's it's helpful with new emerging technologies to have them funded, you know, by people who are changing the world and able to invest large amounts of capital to make something that wasn't possible possible. So I'd imagine that the first show you ever play is probably going to be like some very, very influential people, you know, in that room, which would make it, you know, probably a really cool thing to be a part of. And people might, you know, be willing to fundraise to spend a lot of money to be there. So yeah, I don't know if that's something that you had considered before, or, you know, if, what that looks like with your space station, but like hosting a show and you performing at the show would be a really cool way to combine those two worlds.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've thought about it a lot, but I haven't got to the point of ticketing prices yet, but let's see how much this thing costs.
It could be like, I don't know, like maybe like $50 for me, but then like, you know, I don't know, millions of dollars or hundreds of millions of dollars for everyone else.
Yeah, that sounds fair.
Cool, man. Well, it's great to connect. You know, I know, I've heard quite a bit about you from Bob, and he has, you know, glowing things to say. And I really respect Bob a lot, and anyone that he speaks about, like he talks about you, I know is, you know, probably a very glowing individual. So now having the opportunity to connect with you personally and hear more about your background, your music, what's driving you, it's been great to connect, and I appreciate you taking the space to be here on the podcast. And for anyone who's listening or watching this right now and they want to connect more with you or check out the music and follow you, what's the best place for them to go to connect?
Yeah, Instagram and most other socials on at Dr. Crispy Music, and Crispy spelled like the name Chris. I'm really great at SEO. No, just joking. So DR and then CHRISPY music. Yeah, so Chris with a PY on the end. Yeah,
awesome. And we'll throw all the links in the show notes for easy access.
Awesome.
And thank you for being here, and looking forward to the first ever show in outer space.
Yeah, upwards and onwards.
Hey, this is Michael, and I just wanted to say thank you for tuning in to this episode of the podcast. I hope you found it really valuable, and if you did, if you want to share the word, we really appreciate you leaving a 5-star review on the podcast channel. If you want to learn more about the guest, you can check out the show notes for the links. And before you go, I wanted to remind you that I'm looking for new artists to mentor personally. Before we get started, we always offer a free 30-minute coaching call to make sure it's a good fit before you get your campaign launched. At this point, the artists that we've worked with have hit over 561.3 million streams, a number one album on iTunes, and have helped many artists grow from scratch to making a full-time income with their music online. In a few rare cases, they've even been able to generate $1 million per year with their music. That being said, we are very selective with who we work with, just based on who's the best fit and who we can best serve. And because we have a limited amount of time available for those free sessions, we do require an application process where you can submit your music and you can apply for a free coaching call with our team. So if you're interested, go ahead and click on the link in the show notes to submit an application, share one of your songs. We look forward to checking out your music, and we'll see you in the next episode.